his name. So you know it's Parshas Tetzaveh, that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is one of the only parshas in the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not found in this week's parasha, right? And the parasha starts Va'ata Tetzaveh. You know, Hashem just says you shall command, and it goes on to mitzvahs, but it doesn't actually quote Moshe Rabbeinu's name at all. And probably most people are used to, you know, we know from we've heard this before, that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem in next week's parasha, actually, after the Egel, he said to Hashem, I want you to be Moichel Klal Yisrael of the Egel, otherwise Vim Ayin, if not, Mecheni Nomi Sifrucha Hashem Ksavto. Wipe my name, delete my name from the Torah. Right, so really, Moshe Rabbeinu was asking his name should not appear in the Torah at all. Now, although it was al tanai, Moshe Rabbeinu's, if we'd say the klola, but it was a kilas chochem al tanai. I feel al tanai hibor. We know the halacha is that a klola of a talmud chochem, even stand al tanai, even stand on condition something, even if the condition is not met. But if a chochem says a klola, then the klola is fulfilled. So although Moshe Rabbeinu said kilas chochem, he said al tanai that Hashem, if you're not Moichel Klal Yisrael, delete my name. But even though Hakadosh Baruch Hu was Moichel Klal Yisrael of the Egel, his name was still deleted. Now really, his name should have been deleted from the entire Torah, but Hashem went if Nimishur Zdin and just deleted from Parshas Tetzaveh. Now why Parshas Tetzaveh, which is really before next week's parasha? Moshe Rabbeinu said this in Parashas Kisiso, because really Kisiso came before Tetzaveh, right? Kisiso is about the Egel. The whole Indian of the Mishkan and the midst of Mishkan, Truma Tetzaveh, Yaakov Yehudah, came actually after Kisiso in time. So Moshe Rabbeinu in Kisiso said, Hashem, if you're not Moichel, then please delete my name. So in the following parasha after Kisiso, which is really Tetzaveh, Hashem then deleted his name from Tetzaveh. I mean, the Sforim say that Moshe Rabbeinu's words were, Mecheni Nomi Sifrucho, delete my name from Yosefer, Sifrucho, Sefer Chof. The 20th parasha in the Torah is Tetzaveh. So that's a remez, right? Tetzaveh, they also say that there's only Asheko Savto is Rosh HaTevis. Mechina Misivcha Asheko Savto is Rosh HaTevis. The parasha in which Rabbeinu's name is not found in. Asheko Savto stands for Atan Nitzovim, Shoiftim. Rei stands for Re'ei. Kosavto, the Chaf and the Sof stand for Kiseitse. The base is a big one for Bereshis. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not found in the entire Bereshis, and the Sof is Tetzaveh. So we know this. That Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, if you're not going to be Moichel Klal Yisrael, please take my name. You know, delete my name. And he said it was only Tetzaveh, which was the next parasha after Kisiso, really. And the question is, what's Moshe Rabbeinu gained by not having his name in the Torah? Hashem, if you're not Moichel, take my name away. So let's just discuss a little bit about Moshe Rabbeinu, and we'll see a bit about Moshe Rabbeinu, and we'll share a couple of stories with the Olam. The first time we meet Moshe Rabbeinu is in Parshas Shemos, and the Torah doesn't tell us much about his young years. The Torah starts straight away, and Moshe Rabbeinu grows up. The Pasuk says, "Vayigdal Moshe." Moshe grew up. Vayetel Echov. He went outside. Vayar b'sivloisom, and he saw the pain, the tzoros of Klal Yisrael. That means the first description of Moshe Rabbeinu is someone Vayar b'sivloisom, which tells us a lot. A lot of times, you know, your first impression, the first thing the Torah tells us about Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayar b'sivloisom, that it really describes Moshe Rabbeinu's essence. He was someone who's Vayar b'sivloisom. He was someone who saw Klal Yisrael's hardship, and he was, Rashi's words are, Nosan Eino v'liboy, he literally stelled to the pain, and he put himself in their matzav, liyes meitzaleim. So I'll read you out the words of Chazal, and if you get a bit of an understanding of Moshe Rabbeinu, and we'll understand better why he was asking Hashem to take his name out. Chazal tell us the words are, he saw their pain, he cried, and he said, Chaval li aleichem, you know, I feel so bad for you. Me it in Moshe Aleichem. You know, so halavai, I could die in your place. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. And the Medrash tells us, she'elechom melocha koshem melechas tit. There's no job that's harder than mamish the cement, the mud, the hard, the dirty jobs that Klal Yisrael were doing then. V'yonoisen k'seifov umesayeh lechol echad ve'echad mehem. He literally went and he schlepped and he helped people. Schlepped the things. And Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem said, ato yinachto asokecho. You know, you've left your personal life for lachto liris b'tzar shlachirim Yisrael, and you've gone to feel the pain of Klal Yisrael. V'nahakto behen minakachim ani meniach esel yoinim v'sachtem adam imcho. Because that I'm going to leave the upper spheres, the lower spheres, I'm going to come and speak to you. So Hashem clearly says it was this mid of Moshe Rabbeinu that he was being called in Noise Ba'oil. He felt other people's pain, other people's hardship. So that is what gave Moshe Rabbeinu the qualities to become the manik. He became the manik of Klal Yisrael because of this mid of being Noise Ba'oil. He wasn't necessarily a great speaker. He wasn't necessarily it doesn't say how much, what a Kriyas Talmud Chacham was. Said he had this midah, Moshe Rabbeinu had this midah, v'yarbis of loisam. Other people were in pain, he felt other people's pain, he felt other people's hardship, and that's why Akash Baruch said, if that's the case, then I'm gonna choose you to be the manik. So that's Moshe Rabbeinu. So let's talk a little bit maybe about this concept of being noisib or oil, seeing someone else's hardship, maybe see a few different levels in this. There was once a bocher in America doing I think it's called a domestic flight from one state to another state, and he's flying, and Lamaisa, he turned up at the airport last minute late in the evening, and he booked himself a ticket on the spot. So for a late night flight, he's going back to yeshiva, and there was no chance that he's going to have a kosher meal on the flight because he was just booked. Unless 24 hours before, you're not going to get no chance to get a kosher meal on the flight. And so he gets onto flight and whatever, and part of the way into the flight, the stewardess comes up to him, says, "Here's a kosher meal for you." So he says, "It can't be for me. I never order a kosher meal. Are you sure you're the right?" He said, "Yeah, there's someone a few rows behind." He said, "It's for you." He turns around, he looks back a few rows, and a few rows behind him is Reb Motcha Gifter, Rosh Yiva of Tells, and he's obviously offering him his own meal. So he says, so the bocher gets up straight away, he goes over, he says, "Rashiv, it's not my meal, it's your meal, you're the one, it's your meal." So he says to him, "Look, we're going to get in late, right, this plane's landing late. I've got a wife waiting for me at home, I'm walking at 12, 1 o'clock, there'll be supper on the table for me. You're going to walk into yeshiva at 12, 1 o'clock in the dormitory, there's no food, you take the supper, and it's okay, I'll be okay." That's an example of let's call it first level in Noise Ba'oil, where he put himself out physically. I tell another fantastic story. Reb Pesach Kron said this over. He said Reb Pesach Kron is an older man now, Bli Anhara, and when he was a young man, I think when he was before he was even married, he lost his father. And I think he was the oldest one at home. And so you can imagine it was very difficult. He's got the responsibility of looking after the family. So soon after the shiva, he's in shul, davening for the omer, and a man comes up to him. I think the man's name was named by the name of Mr. Israel, his name was. And the man comes up to him with an envelope. And she said, "What's it? $1,500. So you're talking about, before he's married, about 17, 18 years old, talking about 50 years ago, right? 50 years ago, $1,500 was worth a lot more than it is now. So she said, it's a difficult time for the family, So he says, "I don't want to take tzedakah." So the man says, "It's not tzedakah, it's a loan. All right, whenever you're ready, pay it back." "Okay, fine, if it's a loan, I don't mind, I'll take anything." So Reb Yitzchak Kron takes the envelope, and he brings it home, and he goes to his mother. Mother says the same thing. "No, it's not stock, it's just a loan, and whenever we're ready, we can pay up the loan." So, okay, fine. So it helps the family get through the difficult time, and they get back on their feet, etc., etc., and he learns to become a moel, and he's a moel, and he helps get the family financially back on their feet. So sometime later, his mother says to him, "I think we're ready to pay back the $1,500. So, okay, they put together an envelope of $1,500, and he goes back to this Mr. Israel, and this Mr. Israel says to him, "I'm not taking it." She says, "What do you mean? You said it's a loan." "I'm not taking it." He said, "It's a loan. It's not stock. I'm not taking stock. He said, "It's a loan." He said, "You're right, it's a loan, but let me tell you something." This person said to him, "A number of years ago, I lost all my guilt. I lost my wealth. And I was going through a very, very difficult time. And I had a similar story to you. A person by the name of Mr. Lewinstein, Mr. Lewinstein came up to me in shul one day with an envelope with $1,500. And I said the same thing to him. I said, "I'm not taking stock." He says, "No, it's a loan." I said to him, "What should I do? Whenever you're ready, pay back the loan." And Baruch Hashem, I used the geld, and I got back on my feet, and I wanted to repay the loan. I went to this Mr. Lewinstein, and he said to me, "He's not taking it back." I said, "The same thing you're telling me." He said, "It's a loan." I said, "What do you mean? It's a loan. It's not stocker." So he says, "You know what's a loan? Pay it back. Don't pay it back to me. Find someone else that needs this, that he could do with $1,500, and pay it back to him. And when he's ready to pay it back to someone else." So he said to Reb Zacharon, "So I paid back my loan by giving you the $1,500. And now that you're repaying it, don't repay it to me. Find someone else to give it on to get $1,500." And so the person said, "That's the case." He passed on the geld to someone else, and then he doesn't know where it's gone from person to person. That's another example of what Moshe Rabbeinu had here, where he was a Yar Rebbe of Elohim. He went out and he physically went and took part in you know, he saw someone else's difficulty and he stelled zu. He think. I mean, it ran in the family by Moshe Rabbeinu, right? We all know by when Basik came to Moshe Rabbeinu to take Moshe Rabbeinu out of the river. She says, "V'hinin nar boiche," the child was crying. And she says, "I told me Yalde Ivrim must be a Jewish child, right?" So first, it's two problems with the pasuk. Number one is that in Naraboicha, Nara sounds like a young lad, young child. It was a baby. It's the Gemara discussed him in Naraboicha, right? Gemara says that he had a voice that sounded like a grown child. And she said, "Oh, he must be Jewish, right? Because he's crying, must he be Jewish?" There's quite a few vet about this, but the Balaturim says that in Naraboicha is referring to actually to Aaron HaKohen. Basi is taking Moshe Rabbeinu out just to see that Aaron stands, there's a child there standing by the bushes crying about this child. Says, "Ah, if there's someone else crying for someone else, Vatemi Yalde Ivrim, it must be a Yid." Because you know, someone put themselves on the Vatemi Yalde, it must be a Jewish child, this, because so you see, it was in Moshe Rabbeinu's family, this concept, this the atmosphere of being Nois Boil. So I think maybe we can summarize, let's trap it into three categories. You've got the first category, we said, of the Yarbis of Loisam, when Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron, the concept of, you know, we said these couple of stories where a person will go and put himself out for someone else physically, whether with geld, whoever it may be, or to help schlep, like Moshe Rabbeinu helped the Eden schlep. But I think there's a more delicate level of calling Nois Boil, which maybe is not is easier, it's cheaper, but it's far more powerful. I had a friend who learned in Ponovich, and he was in the Ponovich Kollel. And one day, a bocha comes up to him with an envelope. He wants to invite him to the chasna. A bocha in Ponovich Yeshiva came up to him and wanted to invite him to his chasna. He came to go. So he did what most of us, I don't know how to do it nowadays, but he feels he's got a paperclip there, so it means obviously he's invited to the evening as well to dinner. And he's like, look at this bocha, he doesn't recognize him. He says, "You sure?" He goes, "The right person?" "Yeah." He said, "I don't know you." "Yeah, you saved my life in Yeshiva." "You got the right person. I didn't recall you at all, didn't recognize you at all." He says, "Yes, because I stayed in Yeshiva." He said, "Well, what are you talking about?" He says, "Well, I was a young boch, I came to Yeshiva, and when I came to Yeshiva, then Lemaisa wasn't working well. And basically I decided after a couple of weeks that I'm leaving Yeshiva. I'm done, whatever, okay, another Yeshiva, go to work, whatever, maybe, but I'm leaving Yeshiva." And then it was basically the Shabbos before I was going to pack my bags and go. And I'm walking around as it goes in the yeshivas. So you walk around, say good Shabbos to Anhola. And I'm walking around, and you were standing behind me, and you mostly tap in the back, and you showed me that my collar was a bit scrunched up. And you straightened me, and you gave me a nice warm good Shabbos. He said it was the first time I felt like someone actually noticed me, cared about me, and I made a difference to someone. And that changed my whole decision. I decided to stay in yeshiva. So he said, "Yeah, you did say that." So there's an example of not necessarily what Rabbeinu did, where you go and you actually physically schlep and stelt stocker, whatever it may be. It's a case where you give Yena chashivas. You know, we all know the Torah was given on Har Sinai, right? Torah was given on Har Sinai, right? Why is Torah given on Har Sinai? Because Har Sinai was the smallest mountain, so it's important for Torah. One of the ways you want to be a Talmud Chacham, you need to be an Onov, you need to be humble, right? So that's why it was given on Har Sinai. So let me ask you a question, which I wonder if anyone here saw the question. If the Torah, if to be kind of the Torah, right? One of the ways of acquiring Torah is to be humble. So maybe it should be given in a valley. Why? Why in the smallest mountain? Given in a valley. If Hashem is looking for a place to give the Torah and onov and faket, we don't feel so much about ourselves and we don't think too much about ourselves, so give in a valley. Why give on Har Sinai and Lowest Mountain? So let's find a valley. I'm sure there's valleys in the desert, you know. Go give in a valley. So the Balaam was to say, you know, the reason is because a person who feels like a valley, not going to tzliach. Every person's got to feel like a mountain. Don't feel like a greater mountain, but you've got to feel like a mountain. And that way, the Maisa, so this is another, and it's another category of, if you want to call it, Noisiv Oil, of Moshe Rabbeinu's Midah, of looking at other people. But it doesn't have to, you know, words are very cheap, but they're very expensive. Words are the cheapest thing, doesn't cost anything. But the Maisa can make the biggest difference to someone else's life. The Rambam says, Atamoytzi Reiv Bnei Odom, Miyagim Nafshei Seem, because if we say him, a person will work so much, right, but omov yigia with so much effort, she'ein lemala mehem, but your person puts so much effort, k'deish yigia leimaila ukovich yasubi elam, just that person feels A person feels valued and appreciated by other people. They say what's worse than being spoken about? No one wants to be the subject of discussion. Everyone's talking about me. Worse than being spoken about is not being spoken about. Someone who's not spoken about feels like a fly on the walls. Also, everybody's got to feel a little bit maybe comes in. But Moshe Rabbeinu, you find. It says Moshe Rabbeinu saw the mitri hitting, so it says Vayarki ein ish, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu looked around. It's terrible what's going on. Vayarki ein ish. He saw no one was around, and so he went and he killed the mitri with Hashem's name. And the question is, what do we know is no one around? Because very clear people were around. Because you clearly see later Dosna Virom, people were around. They knew about it. What Moshe Rabbeinu had done, he had to run for his life. People didn't know about it. So Rashi says that what means there was no one around. Means Moshe Rabbeinu looked and there was no one. Yarkin Ish means he saw there was no one, no great tzaddik going to come out of this mitzri, etc. One of the rebbes says, Gevaldik Zach says, you know, Yarkin Ish means, it's quite a sharp of what this. Yarkin Ish, he saw there was no one there. Doesn't mean there was no one there. Of course, there were people around, but he saw there was no one standing up for something that was being done wrong. Yarkin Ish, there was no one who had meat inside, you know, he's willing to stand up for something. And so therefore you think, which reminds me, I saw a story again, not for me to start, you know, right, but I saw a powerful story just goes to show us the power of being able to, we know in the, in America you have Dr. Wickler is his name, right, Dr. Wickler, so he's a therapist, whoever it may be, I don't know, but he writes articles and he's, you know, he helps people. So he wrote something fantastic once. He said that he was playing football, you know, five aside, 10 of them, and it was, you know, it was that all professional, all married people, lawyers, rebbers, all. Pardon?
They're not nice. They're nice people. They're not nice.
Right. So he had a bunch of people doing their job, you know, as they need to, etc. And anyway, in the middle of the game, so that in the middle of the game there was someone on the other side, I think it was, who messed up the ball badly, and he messed up like, two left feet. So there was a lawyer, not a nice person, Daka, on the team. He got really upset, and he gave the guys a run in. You don't have to play. What are you thinking? Don't have to play. So okay, whatever. So there was a rebbe amongst the game. He said, "Come on, it's just a game. You know, we don't." Come on, don't get so het up about it. Anyway, the same thing happened again later. The same guy messed up the ball, and the lawyer again gave him a zah. Mama says, whatever, gave a proper rollicking and whatever thing. So again, the rebbe stood up and said, okay, you know, come on, it's just a game. Don't get so personal about it. It happened a third time, and the guy again went for the kill, and he gave him a zah. Mama says, Misha Beirach, then Misha Porah, what's going on over here? You don't have to play, waste of time. Next time, betters, 4-5, whatever he said to him, right? So at that point, this rebbe got up and said, look, it's just a game, and, you know, finish. He must be like, I'm not playing anymore. And he walks off. He gets up and he walks off the pitch. And Dr. Wickler said, one by one, every guy attacker got up and left that game. And he thought to himself afterwards. He thought, you know, why couldn't I have done that? You know, something was going on. I saw something wrong happening. Why didn't I have that ability to stand up and to the thing? Okay, it's like that. Well, just bring this in brackets. But it says, by Moshe Rabbeinu, Yarki ein ish. He saw there was no one there. Then. So that's why. So he saw no one there means there was no one who was willing to think. So I think if we give, you know, we can summarize it as we've said like this: as Moshe Rabbeinu had the middle of the Yarbis of Loisam, where he physically went and he helped Klal Yisrael schlep. You know, then you've got another way which is much cheaper and easier, where just to make another yid feel like a Har Sinai. Don't make him feel like a valley, make him feel like a Har Sinai. You know, which is. Words easy and cheap. I saw a fantastic story, another mitzvah which brings this out. By Moshe Feinstein, he was nifta on it was either Purim, Erev Purim, on Purim. The Levi went from America to Yisrael on Purim, right? I think it was on Purim. And anyway, so the Levi went to the airport, went to Yisrael. And at the Leviah, so normally only the close family go to the airport, etc. There was a lady, Mamash, crying eyes out over there. Mamash, Moshe, what am I going to do without you? And think one of the family members looking around doesn't recognize the lady as being someone related. And so he goes up to her after, he says, excuse me, you have a shaykhah from Moshe? What do you mean, Mir of Moshe? He's like, what do you mean, Mir of Moshe? For 42 years, I spoke to Moshe every week. He spoke to Mishmash every week. Yeah, this lady who had been almona for 42 years. For 42 years, she called she called Rav Moshe Feinstein up every Friday with two very, very, very important questions. Question number one is, Rav Moshe, do you know what time Shabbos comes in? And then, fine, and do you know what time Shabbos goes out? For 42 years. Now, if someone would call me up on a Friday, ask me what time Shabbos comes in or goes out, so the first week I'll tell him, Shabbos comes in 3:20, whatever it is, and goes out this time. The second week, I'll bite my lip and I'll tell him. But then I got third, fourth week, I'd say, here, take a fiver, go buy yourself a luach and stop driving me crazy every single week. But Rav Moshe didn't do that. Why? Rav Moshe knew it was not the time for Shabbos she needed. He knew it was that feeling good factor. And by her speaking to the God Ladoir, you know, then so for 42 years he picked up the phone and then he obviously asked how the children, how the grandchildren, how the tablets, blood pressure, you know, yeah, whatever. But he had the schmooze, that thing. If you know who Rav Moshe Feinstein was, yeah, I don't know if anyone knows, Rav Moshe Feinstein, he once called up his nephew, Rav Chil Michel Feinstein, yeah? And he said to him, I want to invite you over for L'chaim. What's the L'chaim? So he said, L'chaim is a finished shas, so I want to invite you for L'chaim. So his nephew says to him, Feta, my uncle, if I have a L'chaim every time you finish shas, I'll be drunk. Yeah. So he says, this is my second time. Especially my second time. She says, what do you mean it's your second time? It's not your second time. He said, no, it's my second time finishing 101 times. You know what it means? You know what it means? Rav Moshe, I finished shas every 200 times, and someone on that level can just spend time a few minutes every week with just, you know, taking a phone call all the time. Shabbos comes out. That is another form of Rav Moshe Feinstein. You don't have to have. It's not very hard. You just got to have patience and to make someone else feel good. Rav Chatzkel Abramsky was once walking down the street. Rav Chatzkel Abramsky was Rav here in London, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He was once walking down the street and he sees a boy crying. And so he asks the boy, what's this? So the boy said to him, you want to cry? Wait, why? My friend said, my jumper's not a nice jumper. So he takes his glasses out of his frack, he puts them, he says, what do you mean? Your jumper, mamish, it's beautiful, it's lovely, mamish nice jumper. The boy starts to smile and think. He says to the boy, do you know who I am? He says, I see you around. Don't you? I'm Chatzkel Abramsky, I'm the Rav of the Shul. You know, go tell your parents that Chatzkel Abramsky said that your jumper's a nice jumper. You know, it's very nice, beautiful. So he runs back home all excited, and a few minutes later the parents come running out, so sorry, driving the Rav crazy about their son's jumper. He said, no, what's this? Akadosh Baruch Hu said, Vanachta Bedrochov, Vidovka Boy, you have to be close to Hashem, you have to cling to Hashem. You know, Akadosh Baruch Hu is, we know Akadosh Baruch Hu is Eishei Cheles, right? You can't just cling to Hashem. What it means is we have to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got time for everyone, got time to hear us three times a day, five times a day, so you've got to have time for other people. That's that middah, that of seeing someone else's thing without even having, it doesn't cost anything, but just thing. Just one more fantastic story in this Indian about you know, seeing someone else's thing. Then we'll get back to our third level, which we'll get to Moshe Rabbeinu, why he deleted his name. So by Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was gone, a godel in Eretz Yisrael, and when he was nifta, so his nephew got up at the Levaya and said a fantastic mice like this. He said that this was just after the Second World War, before, you know, the State of Israel was set up, etc. And the matzav there was very, very tense, and, you know, the British were in charge, etc., etc. And the Kitzer, the British were being attacked from all over, and they put a curfew in place, 6 p.m. till 6 a.m. There's no being out of the house at all. Anyone out of the house 6 p.m. 6 a.m. runs the risk of being shot, because we don't know what's going on. Yeah, at night time, if kids, anyone risks being shot. Anyway, so the nephew who spoke, his name was Rav Moshe Chevroini. So he's sitting in yeshiva, and he's learning in yeshiva all night. And the door's locked, not allowed on the street, but he's sitting in yeshiva all night learning. 2 o'clock in the morning, he gets a bang on the door in yeshiva, and he's much petrified. Who's at the door? 2 o'clock in the morning, maybe it's the police, whatever it is, thing. And who's there? It's his uncle, Rav Issa Zalman. Mrs. Alma Meltzer. So he opens up quickly. What are you doing on the street? She gets dangerous. You could be shot. You could be killed. No. I've got a Shvera Rambam. I need help with the Rambam. So he calls him in. He comes in and they work out and thing. And he asks the Kashan Rambam. So Moshe Chavreini suggests a good answer. And he's very excited. He gives a good answer. Okay, I'm going to go back. He said, well, don't go back. Stay here. Now I've got to go back. I've got to write down this Chiddush. I've got to write it right here. I've got to write down in my book at home. Kitzi can't stop him. And he goes out and he goes, thing. That's the story that Moshe Chavreini said over at the Levaya. He said, said, you know, the uncle, look at his avas Torah, look how much he loved Torah, that he was willing to mamash put his life in danger to come to hear Teretz and the Rambam and to go back and write it. So that's what he says in the Raya. And he came to Shiva, and Shlomo Yisrael Chevroni came to the Shiva to be Menachem Oval, his auntie, and so the Olam said over, do you know what he said? Look, fantastic Maisa that he said over, you know, the nephew said over, at the Levi, you know, they would talk about it. So the Rebbetzin said, no, that's not the story, you got the story wrong. I wasn't got the story wrong, it happened with me, I know what happened, right? He came, he said, no, you think the story is the story about Avas Torah, it's completely different story, I'll tell you what happened. Rabbi Issa Zalman wanted to have his Chedushim printed, the Evna Ozel, which most shuls and every yeshiva has got the Sforum on the Rambam. Rabbi Issa Zalman, how many volumes? 5-10 volumes it is. And he wanted the Sforum printed. And Bekitzer, at that time, he went to printers. The printer said, there's nothing to talk about. They're fully booked for the next, I think it was 5 years. The next few years, they're fully, fully booked. Nothing to talk about. And he was very upset. He really wanted to print his Sforum. And there was no way. There's like a queue for the next few years. There's no way. One day, in the afternoon, the Rebbe said, I got a message, a phone call, whatever it may have been, from the printers to say, we've got a slot tomorrow. If you can go and bring in your ksovim, your notes by tomorrow, 8 o'clock, we can print your husband's sforim, we've got a can stage, whatever it is. Otherwise, it's a wait of a few years. She was mamish overjoyed, right? So when Rebbe Zalman came home that day from yeshiva, she said to him, if we can get the notes in by tomorrow, 8 o'clock a.m., then we can think. So he's very, very excited. And he suddenly says, uh-oh, I've got an issue. What's the issue? We can't do it. Why not? I just realized, in Evna Oslo, my Sforim, I've got three nephews. I've mentioned something about my two other nephews, Rav Chatzkel Sarna and Rav Aaron Cohen. Rav Aaron Cohen's name was. I've mentioned Akasha, a Teretz, something. I've not got anything in there from the nephew, Rav Moshe Chevroni. And if I'm going to go and print a Sforim without him in, he might be offended. And the wife's like, come on, you know, you're going to miss your whole slot. I'm sure he's okay. It doesn't matter. Thing. She says, I cannot go and print this for him without having his name in there as well. It can be just two names, not third name, not third nephew. So my wife came up with an idea. Do you know what? Find a kasher you've only got teretz for. Take away your teretz. Go find Rav Moshe Chevroni now, 2 o'clock in the morning, and get a teretz from him and write down his answer. And that way, finish, you can get an answer from him inside the sefer. And that's what he did. And that's why he put his life in danger. He ran through the streets. So he said it wasn't Avas Torah that drove him to get there. It was his Avas Abrius. You know how much he cared that Vienna shouldn't see in the sefer that my name is not mentioned. He went there, and that's why he had to run back to write in his notes to have the next morning. So that again is another example of a thing. So we've discussed two examples of where a person puts himself above other people, either physically and financially, or just making someone else feel good. Then this brings us back now to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had like a third level. Sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. Right, we know there's nothing you can do about it, but what you can do is mekavenan. You know, you can't do anything about it, but at least it can bother you. By Moshe Rabbeinu here, we all know that Pari had three advisors when he was making the Gemara tells us. There was Bilam, Yisra, and Eiv, and Bilam, who said, "Yeah, go for it, kill the Edens." He was taki killed. Yisra, who ran away, so he taka was zeicha to have fantastic at the son like Moshe Rabbeinu, and Eiv stayed quiet, and therefore he was punished midah keneged midah, that he had a life full of suffering. And everyone knows the famous question: well, the midah keneged midah should have been get nothing, don't get punished, don't get good, just get nothing. And the famous Briskarov said that no, the midah keneged midah of Eiv staying quiet is to have yisurim. Why? As a tukvei shreiman, you know, if it bothers you, then you would cry. If he didn't do anything, he didn't bother. So that's why the midah keneged midah. So I think if you know Moshe Rabbeinu, we see in Parshas Shemot, he had the viabs of schlepping and physically business of other people. Here you see the most delicate level of no spoil, where there's nothing you can even do about it. It's not even his avera. It's Klal Avera, but he just said, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu bothers me so much, just take my name out of the Torah." So we discussed this no spoil, where like Moshe Rabbeinu was put on his shoulders. You have helping other people, where even just a good vote. Remember, every Yid has to feel like a Har Sinai, don't feel like a valley. And then you have other things. There's nothing you can do, but you just say, "Hashem, Hakadosh Baruch Hu bothers me." You know, Hakadosh Baruch Hu should help us all, that we should also live with this midah. This Yad Deshma. Okay, Shkoyach invite me.
Thank you. I was not well received.